You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee shops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport. Today, we are in Chartres.
Where are we, Lionel?
We're in Chartres. Well, we're on the outskirts of Chartres, outside. Let's not oversell this restaurant. We're on a trading estate, an industrial estate. Very strange, this, because there are two B&B hotels. That's one of the more budget end of the hotel.
End of the spectrum.
Yeah, after our chateau at the start of the week, we're back down to earth.
But see, you should see what we're seeing next week, Francois. Just a gentle decline.
But there's two of them within 50 metres of one another, and we tried to check into the wrong one and were sent across the road to... the other one. But yeah, we're the town of Chartres is actually very nice. The cathedral is stunning, and we'll be heading into town for dinner.
We're going to head in there soon, but let's not, let's get straight into today's stage, because it was an absolute thriller. Lionel. Oh, sorry, I should introduce you. Francois Thomazeau. Hello, Francois.
Hi there. How are you
I'm
doing?
Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
Hello.
It's been a long day, hasn't
give
it?
Us, it has been a long day. Give us the tale of the étape, please.
Stage 7 from Fougères to Chartres. 231 kilometres, the longest stage of the race. And, there was some pretty tough watching, really. It was a day to watch the last, not even the last 10 kilometres, because they didn't really get going until 5 kilometres from the line. Dylan Groenewegen has won the stage, his second Tour de France stage after winning on the Champs-Élysées last year. He's been a little bit behind Gaviria and Sagan in the finishes so far, but he got the win ahead of Gaviria and Sagan today. Greg Van Avermaet has retained the yellow jersey and in fact extended his lead by 3 seconds thanks to that time bonus sprint. But the action was minimal. Johan Ofredo of Wanty Groupe Gobert was the first to attack, but he was caught very quickly. Then his teammate Thomas De Gendt spent around 13 kilometres away before he realised no one was coming across to him, so he sat up and went back. Now then there was a really powerful break. Oliver Naarsen, Tony Gallopin, Arthur Vichot, Thomas De Gendt, Lucas Postelberger, Yves Lampaert, Michael Gergel, Julien Vermot, Ed Toynes, and Simon Gerrans. I mean, that is a strong move. A lot of firepower in that move, which is obviously why Lotto NL Jumbo were very keen to shut it down. And if they hadn't been very keen to shut it down, somebody else would have done. And that was back under control after 25 kilometres. 10 kilometres after that, Ofredo went again, and he spent 108 kilometres out in front on his own, gained 9 minutes at one point, but was going nowhere. And then Laurent Pichon of Fortuneo Samsic went with 84 kilometres to go, and he spent around 50k off the front on his own. And then there was nothing. And then after 5 hours and 43 minutes, there was the sprint finish. None of the jerseys have changed hands. And it's one of those days where, with the Tour de France, you kind of have to be careful what you wish for. We've got the cobbles on Sunday. We've got short, explosive mountain stages, which do promise to be entertaining from start to finish. But this really was going back to the era of the Jean-Marie Leblanc tours in the 90s and the 2000s, where it seemed the first week of the tour seemed to take a fortnight to get across northern France from either east to west or west to east.
Yeah, we had much more time to lunch at the time. I mean, that was one of the good things about Jean-Marie Leblanc's stages.
Oh, our food is just arriving. A little appetizer there. Yes. But, you know, I don't mind so much. The funniest comment I saw on Twitter actually was somebody saying the oldest rider in the race is 40, but he'll be 50 by the time this stage finishes. We can't have those great moments of excitement without the dull moments. It's funny, people getting sort of angry about it. It's the nature of the race that there will be interesting days and less interesting days. We had a bit of a cracker yesterday. You know, the riders have got a big day coming up on Sunday. I hope tomorrow's a little bit more exciting, but I guess the curious thing today was why there was no breakaway, because at least with a breakaway, you know, it forces some action upon the race, because there has to be a chase. The guys in front aren't just going to sit up and be caught. There was no group. Really.
Thomas Vauclair on French television had an explanation which is quite interesting. He said that actually they didn't purposely caught the breakaway and the Alfredo and all, but he said that the roads were not that that wide, meaning that all the peloton is all together, and the effect of slipstream is, he said, it's like a kind of a roller coaster, you know, and even without with everybody trying to get into position, that the peloton gets faster and faster, and the end ended up catching up the break unwittingly.
The big problem is that of the 22 teams, probably 18 of them have either got a sprinter who could realistically win the stage, or a GC rider who will need all the support of his teammates later on in the tour. And that leaves really only the four wildcard teams to go in the breaks. Cofidis are kind of conning themselves into thinking that they've got a sprinter who could win a stage here. Christophe Laporte is not bad, but he's not, he's top 10 material, not really a stage winner. Direct Energy have put two men in the break a couple of times, I think, haven't they? They've certainly...
More than that, there were three times they won the Prix de la Combativité for the most aggressive rider three times since the start of the, so it seems to be the thing they're looking for. Actually, they wanted Calmejean to do better in the day, 2 days ago, and also they have a good sprinter in Thomas Boudin, who in the, on track only 3 or 4 years ago was on par with Gaviria, but obviously he's not growing as quickly as a Colombian.
So that really left Fortuneo and Wanty Group Gobert, and I suppose the frustrating thing for them was that it was only ever one rider at a time up the road. At the finish, I saw Hilaire van der Schuren pull up in his Wanty Group Gobert team car. He was making a bit of a mess of parking. It became obvious that he was trying to park in a hurry because he hopped out and ran straight over to the bushes and visited the toilet, because there wasn't a toilet, but he needed the loo. And when he came back, we had a quick word, and it was clear that he'd spent quite a bit of the afternoon sitting in the car needing the toilet. Well, that was a long day on the Tour de France. How long have you needed the toilet?
A lot of time, eh? Three times I was going on the side of the road, and now at the end of the race also, of the stage.
Two of your riders spent quite a lot of time up the road on their own, but no one else wanted to join in. It wasn't the Tour de France at its best today, was it?
Well, it was a special day. It was a long day from this morning, and then also the speed was not so fast. That was also the reason why I said to the riders, go, because all we wait 8 hours on the bike, it's better now.
Is it frustrating that other teams don't want to join you up the road?
Everybody do his own technique, and we do the technique of us, and that is the most important thing, I think.
Do you think tomorrow will be the same, or do you think it was because today was so long?
We'll see it in this evening, what we do tomorrow.
But in terms of the race, what was the problem today? Was it just too long and everyone's had a stressful few days?
No, I think everybody is afraid that it's the new cycling. Nobody wants to make a break, okay?
Because of the 8-man teams?
We try it, and we do our work, and we are here for animate the tour, and we try to do it.
A community around the world, stories and films with the most compelling characters, the world's finest apparel, explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Hi, I'm Amy from Rafa. At Rafa, we believe that cycling transforms lives and that cycling is the answer to many of our daily problems and challenges. We have 23 Rafa clubhouses around the world with 300 rides a week with thousands of people. So, wherever you are, we invite you to ride with us. See rafa.cc to find a ride near you.
Yes, thank you very much to Rafa, our headline sponsor. A little reminder that we will be presenting the President's Charm Award that comes with a coveted Rafa t-shirt to a lucky rider over the next couple of days. The t-shirts will be arriving on Monday with Orla Shinoui. We're looking forward to that, the t-shirts arriving. And
is she going to wear them all? So that, because she's only travelling with hand luggage, no?
I did actually get her a bag for the hold on. If you're listening, don't worry. But the lightest weight possible. So careful how you pack, and do leave space for 4 t-shirts. Anyway, somebody will win that. We're going to run the poll starting tonight. Sylvain Chavanel, a popular choice. Lawson Craddock, who's been battling through the pain barrier and raising a lot of money for his local track in Houston, Texas, is another one. Johan Alfredo, he won our overall Pedler de Charme at the Tour de France last year, and he could perhaps be in the running again. I mean, we like Johan Alfredo. He's not afraid to say what he thinks, is he? And Francois, he was not very happy at the finish, was he? We saw this last year as well.
He was, well, it was exactly kind of repeat of last year when he actually broke away. First time last year with Tagliafini once, then another time with another rider or on his own. Today, well, it's the second time this year he attacks on his own. He remained 100 km on his own, and he didn't even get the prize for the most aggressive rider. He went to Laurent Pichon, who spent half the same time, you know, on his own on the front of the bunch. So, let's face it, he was pissed off. There is no other way to put it. When we got to him, a number of journalists, including Lionel, some of us, you know, were brushed off because he really, you know, was out of his. Really, well, you know, it was a little bit part of the show because at the end of when we managed to get a few quotes out of him, in the end he was all smiles because it's part of the little, you know, his routine is staging now every year on the tour. So once again he said, well, you know, if I had not broken away, what would have happened? You know, nothing at all. No, nothing at all for the 237Ks. He said it was lack of respect for the spectators, and what he liked most of all was to see a smile on the face of the kids, and that's why he did it. He knew he had no chance to go to the finish, but that's not the point, he said.
Why did he sit up? Because he did eventually sit up, didn't he?
Hmm?
Why did he sit up?
I think that after a while, he got
bored.
No, but once again, I mean, when he sensed that the peloton was actually coming back, because he had 9 minutes, and actually, as Voeckler said, you know, the time gap was diminishing, he did his little act again, you know? Like when he was caught, he shook hands with a BMC rider, you know, who just caught him up. So, in a way, these stages have become kind of a stage for the Juan Alfredo show. So he goes away, shakes hands with the bunch, and then at the finish, goes to the press and says how pissed off he's, frustrated, not being considered as he should be.
Has he convened the meeting for tomorrow morning? Because
he didn't this time. But it's true that last year, he decided, as you said, to convene a meeting at the Wanty bus to discuss, you know, breakaways, and even suggested last year, remember, to award points or time bonus for if you spent 50 km or 100 km in the front. Maybe that's what he thought. Maybe he thought there was a bonus for staying in front, but there wasn't, unfortunately. So the reason why he was also, you know, pissed off is that Wanty Group Gobert, I think they had they already had a maillot de la combativité and maybe another. They had the polka dot jersey for one stage, I think, but they have not much to celebrate. And if you break away for 100 km, that's half the stage today, and you don't get the prize for the most aggressive rider. Well, at the end of the day, well, he said actually, I'm not going to do that again. It's a waste of time. But knowing Alfredo, he probably will.
The thing is, all of the ingredients were there today for that kind of stage, weren't they? Long, flat. The threat of crosswinds, which meant that the teams behind didn't want to take too many risks. In the end, that didn't materialise. But I do wonder whether, instead of having an intermediate sprint for 3 seconds, 2 seconds and 1 second, in the first week, why not make it interesting and put 3 minutes up on the line and say there's a sprint at halfway or two-thirds of the way through the stage.
Can you imagine
the tension and the mess it would be? I mean, 3 minutes would be even more important than the time bonus at the finish. So guys would be more... I mean, you'd have Chris Froome, fighting for a sprint with...
You need to go for a lie down in a darkened room.
1 minute. 30 seconds. I don't know. Just something that would change the dynamic of a day
I mean, there is something a little bit paradoxical about all this, is that we keep, and some of the fans and some of the journalists that we are, we're always complaining that, the tour is too hard, the distances are too long, the climbs are too grueling, and these guys, the poor guys, are tired. It's a problem for their safety, for their health. They're forced to dope because it's too... you hear these sorts of things from time to time. And when, like Greg Van Avermaet said at the end of the day, they have a kind of, quiet day to relax and you know, it's a three-week event, the hardest one in we complain. If we care about their security, if we care about their health, mm-hmm. if we care about their well-being, and if we want a very exciting stage on Sunday, maybe we must accept. I mean, in tennis, from time to time, you have sets that are absolutely boring, but you know, and you have these points. I'm not mentioning cricket here, but you see what I mean. There are lulls in sport. I mean, there are ups and downs.
Don't get me wrong. I'm completely fine with it in the context of the opening week. Completely fine with a day like this, or even a couple of days like this. I mean, I mentioned the 90s. I mean, I can remember the days when, you know, Mario Cipollini would win 4 days in a row. And really those stages were indistinguishable from each other. And then you would get a long breakaway that succeeds. But, you know, the great breakaways of the 90s, I mean, I'm thinking Cedric Vasseur won a stage not all that far from here after a very long break of maybe 150K. Thierry Marie won a stage in the early 90s, 200 and something K. Joel Pellier as well into Futuroscope in the late 80s. They're the ones that stick in my mind. But as sporting entertainment, you... really watching the same thing as we were watching today. It's just that those stories take on an extra element because the breakaway, the lone breakaway, managed to make it all the way to the line.
But it's a funny one, the long lonely breakaways, because you remember Albert Bourdon, who staged the longest breakaway in the history of the tour, said it gone unwittingly. Joël Pellier attacked when the peloton had stopped for a pee. Same with Thierry Marie. He went because he lives in Normandy and the finish was in Le Havre, I think, and also he didn't think he would do it. So most of the time, this kind of crazy breaks that go all the way are never planned.
Yeah, well, we remember, Rich, 11 years ago on this day, July the 13th, the anniversary of Tom Simpson's death, Bradley Wiggins was up the road all on his own, and it turned out he wasn't intentionally honouring the anniversary of Simpson's death. It was his wife's birthday. On that particular day, he attacked, expected other people to come with him. No one did. And then he had that dilemma. Do I go on or do I not? And both, Ofredo, Degand and Pichon all found themselves in that boat today.
There was also a break in 2004 in Chartres, on the stage won by Stuart O'Grady. And it was the first time ever that Thomas Vauclair took the yellow jersey. He became an instant star in France and remained to this day.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's the voice of Seb Piquet, Race Radio at the Tour de France, to remind us to tell you that today's episode sponsor from the Tour de France is Gusto. Gusto is a recipe box with a whole lot of choice. Go to their website and you'll see a new menu with over 30 recipes every week. You choose the ones you like the look of and they'll deliver all the quality ingredients to your door, along with foolproof recipe cards, I can confirm that, that make cooking delicious meals at home simple. I can confirm that too.
Well, Rich, you're off on holiday directly after the tour, but I'm heading home.
He's going home. Oh. He's going home. Lionel's.
You promised you wouldn't do that, Rich. But yeah, first week after the tour, always feel pretty tired. I don't want to be faffing around. So these recipe boxes are absolutely perfect for me. And as soon as I can get on the gusto.co.uk website and select some meals for that week and place the order, I'm going to do that. Because by the time I get home, I'll have forgotten what I've chosen. So it will be a nice surprise. But I'm definitely going to major on some of the 10 to table recipes, which are the recipes that you can knock up in around 10 minutes. I'm a bit of a prevaricator in the kitchen, so it takes me a little bit longer, but they are dead simple recipes. I'm also going to major on some vegetable.
After 3 weeks of meat in France.
Yeah, too much meat and cheese here. So I'm looking forward to, I'm going to look for things that are light, summery and vegetable based. If you would like to become a Gusto customer, you can get a whopping 50% off your first and second recipe boxes of three or more meals with the code cycling. Go to gusto.co.uk/cycling. That's gusto, gusto.co.uk/cycling. And when you check out, simply enter the code cycling to get your discount.
And that's available to people in the UK.
It is.
Well, Francois, you mentioned that we're in Chartres and there's been a lot of significant stages finished here. I think last time I was here was 2012 for the time trial that was won by Bradley Wiggins on his way to winning the Tour de France. What else can you tell us? Can we have a bit of Francois' French flavour? What can you tell us about where we are?
Yeah, well, Chartres, obviously, The most important thing to say about Chartres, it's obviously the cathedral. I mean, I'm a great fan of, you know, old stones, as we say in French. But I'm a great fan of, you know, visiting churches and cathedral, even if my religion is very undetermined. But the Chartres Cathedral, from the inside, if you have a chance to come to Chartres and visit the cathedral, it's really something different. I mean, I've seen many cathedrals, but a kind of a clair obscur, as we say in French, like a little bit of darkness, and the most amazing collection of stained glass windows, I think, in the world, actually. And it all gives the cathedral a kind of blue shade, and there's a name for it. It's so special that it's become known as the Le Bleu de Chartres. You know, the blue of Chartres. So yeah, the cathedral is something you can't miss. On cycling history level, we mentioned Bradley Wiggins. We mentioned the previous stages here. There might be an even more important thing for the tour in Chartres. It's the birthplace of a man called Géo Lefèvre, and Géo Lefèvre is the man who actually invented the Tour de France. One day, he was working for Lotto, the newspaper, directed by Henri Desgranges. And Henri Desgranges needed a big event to make his newspaper popular, because there were already Paris-Brest-Paris that was led by the rival newspaper. And so he asked Géo Lefèvre, "Géo, find me an idea to beat Paris-Brest-Paris." And Géo Lefèvre, you know, didn't know what to say. They were in a brasserie on the Parisian boulevards, and he said, "I don't know, why don't we, you know, go around France and stop in the main towns?" And Henri Desgranges said, "Well, I don't know if it's such a good idea," but they did it. It was 1902, 1903, they did it, and here we are.
Well, you mentioned Paris-Brest-Paris. I'm gonna jump in and up the ante on Francoise French flavour and point out that Fougères, where we started this morning, is one of the checkpoints on the Paris-Brest-Paris route to this day, and it's a checkpoint on the way out and on the way back. Boom.
And on this is a little tour of cathedrals, because tomorrow, I know I'm jumping ahead a bit here, but Amiens has a very famous cathedral, a beautiful cathedral, and the tallest cathedral in France, with the largest interior, I think, of maybe in Europe, perhaps. But it's a huge place, beautiful stained glass there as well.
Is this fact going to the Francoise French flavour adjudicators for checking?
It will do, yeah, but we can revisit it tomorrow night when we're actually
There's a lot to say about Amiens tomorrow, and especially...
Well, we'll do that. We're doing something a little bit different tomorrow, aren't we? We're doing something, this Bastille Day. Mm-hmm. We're going to obviously get Francois to sing the French national anthem
as usual
tomorrow, and probably Sunday as well, because of the World Cup final. And so
there'll be a reason to do it, on top of being the Bastille Day. Tomorrow we're in Amiens, and it's the town of our
Macron.
Friend, Emmanuel Macron, our beloved president.
I think Macron might not be there though. He'll probably be in Russia. No,
I think he's in Russia. Yeah,
but we're going to watch the tour tomorrow with French people, with your in-laws, really.
Exactly.
Rich.
My
family,
my in-laws' family are from that area. It goes through the village of my wife's grandmother. And we're going to join them for a barbecue.
In all my years watching the tour, I've seen it on the roadside. I've obviously covered it. I've seen it on the roadside many times. I like even when I'm working covering the tour, I do like to go and experience it as a spectacle, the way that the fans do. But I've never done the thing that the French public do. They're just where the race itself is almost incidental to their day of picnicking or whatever it happens to be. So I'm really looking forward to seeing. This is going to be an authentic experience, I think.
Very authentic, very authentic. Back to today's stage, though. It was all about Lotto NL Jumbo today. They came up with the stage one after a difficult day the previous day. Now, we'll hear from a few people from that team now. First of all, Primoz Roglic, who came into this race as a dark horse. I mean, he's had some fantastic stage race wins this year. He won, Tour of the Basque Country, Tour of Romandie. He's looked pretty unbeatable in these week-long stage races. He won a stage at the Tour last year, of course. He had a difficult day on the stage to Mur de Bretagne. He, first of all, got caught out in the crosswinds. His team had to chase to bring him back. Then he crashed. But then he finished 10th in the stage, which suggests that he's in great condition. So I grabbed a quick word with him at the start this morning. An eventful day yesterday, a tough day, but you were 10th at the finish. You must have ridden well up the climb.
For sure, I think the guys did a really good job, and yeah, I also fought then at the end.
What happened earlier on when you know you were caught behind in the group? Was it just a case of being caught out by the crosswinds?
Yeah, it's true. We were just yeah, it was like our fault. We are not in front enough, obviously, and yeah. Then when they wanted to blow it, yeah, you cannot move.
And then you had a crash as well, but were you okay?
Yeah. Luckily, I'm fine, and yeah, we go on.
And what are your ambitions here? Are you ready for GC here or stage wins?
We'll see how it goes. As you can see, every day is a lot of things happened to each rider. So I have I just want to be focused from day by day, and we'll see what I can do.
So that was Primoz Roglic at the start this morning, and even more reason to smile for him at the finish, because Dylan Groenewegen, the atomic tadpole, finally did what he has promised to do. You know, he's a lot of people say he's the quickest sprinter around at the moment. He won pretty well, pretty convincingly, and very impressively today.
Did Daniel tell his story about the atomic tadpole nickname in the podcast? I don't want to repeat it if he did.
I think so, yeah.
Did he?
Yeah. He also put it to Dylan Groenewegen himself.
Well, that's what I mean, yeah.
No,
putting it to Dylan, because it's always a bit, I know this from experience, from the Giro, I'm coining the Il Sanguinaccio Volante, the flying black pudding for Simon Yates, which had a mixed reception. The atomic tadpole, I mean, he's not the tallest man in the world, is he, Dylan Groenewegen? He's a pocket rocket, as they would say.
Very muscular.
Very muscular,
he's
yeah.
Some build.
Yeah. But Daniel put Groenewegen this nickname and got the seal of approval.
I like it. Anyway, at the finish, I spoke to his lead-out man, Timo Rusin, who sort of lost him and found him again, and he was obviously delighted. I spoke to him, and Francois, you spoke to the team boss, Richard Ploeg. Let's hear from both of them now. First of all, Timo Rusin, and then Richard Ploeg. What went right today?
Yeah, not everything, but enough, I think. Especially Dylan having a good day. In the beginning of the tour, he had a little trouble with some bad legs, some bad days. And then, yeah, he hoped to score already in the first stage, because he also got the yellow jersey, and it was a big goal for the team and for him and for us. But it went a little wrong. Yeah, we knew we had some more chances, and we knew Dylan would be better, and he felt already better the last days. So today he sprinted from a good position, and he showed his power on a sprint, little uphill, which suits him. So
you're his lead-out man, aren't you? You lost him a bit and then found him again. Can you describe what happened in the closing stages?
Of course, we knew the parkour, and in the final 2K to go was a small, narrow roundabout, which was a really important point. And of course, everybody knows this, and goes through gas to the point and tried to fight for it to be in a good position. And I ended up, I think, as fourth, and yeah, you got a little squeeze because yeah, they come from the sides, and then yeah, you're probably a little flicked because you lose some positions. And yeah, I was looking for him, and he still was in a good position, but he passed me, and then I wanted to try to do a good lead out, but then he chose the right side while I was expecting him to go left, and he did it himself. He could do it, so.
Tomorrow's another day that should suit him as well.
Yeah, for sure. It's another sprint stage, probably. And first we celebrate this one, and then we go to the next one tomorrow.
I suppose this must be a very, very important victory for the team.
Yeah, of course, a stage win in the Tour de France is a big victory. It's a big prize in the year, so yes, it's really important.
Dylan was placed in the previous sprint stages, but he was a little bit short today. What an impression of strength.
Yeah, I think he was boxed in 2 days ago when he was fourth, or 3 days ago, whatever. But then he was also really strong already. You know, he came from 15 to fourth, and also the first stage he was really strong. We saw that already when he became sixth. So you know, when he has the space and the room to really sprint, and then it's there's no photo finish needed.
It was a tricky finish today. I mean, the team handled it very well.
Yeah, we prepared ourselves well, like every day, but especially today, because we knew this corner at 2K was really tricky. So we needed to be there, let's say, top 20, because it costs a lot of energy afterwards to get back in the top 20. if you're not there. So yeah, we prepared well, and the guys performed well, and were there where they needed to be. So it was really good.
Yeah. Do you think it was one of his two best chances on his tour the first day, or and the others are maybe a little more tricky for him?
No, no, he's a strong guy, you know. He can also survive a difficult stage, like he already showed before. And yeah, this was, of course, obviously a big chance for him. And because also the finish line was a little bit climbing. So, yeah, and he's got it, so that's good.
Now it's time to maybe focus a little bit on the GC. After the end of the week, the mountains are coming.
It's time for champagne, I guess.
The cycling podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for sponsoring the cycling podcast. As mentioned last night, they're looking for pictures of people in a knackered state. So
why did you look at me there just then? I do feel a bit knackered.
You're a bit knackered
at the end of week
one, weren't you?
Yeah.
I don't think that's the sort of thing they're really looking for.
You should have taken
I got lumbered with quite a lot of driving today, Richard.
You should have taken a picture of me at the back of the car because I slept for at least 2 hours.
I noticed that in the mirror, Francois. You can get 25% off your Science of Sport products at scienceofsport.com with the code SISCP25. Now, a little bit of business, Lionel. First of all,
yes,
on Monday, the rest day, we will once again be doing the press conference.
We
started
will.
This at the Giro d'Italia. Phone in your questions. Don't phone, but leave a WhatsApp voice memo at our WhatsApp number. Do you have that there?
I do. It is +44 797 133 8205. That's +44 797 133 8205. You can also find that number in our Twitter biog. We're at @cycling_podcast. It would be great.
Followers did we lose in the Twitter cull?
I don't know, actually.
Not many, actually.
No,
we've done all right there.
We're not followed by too many Russian bots, obviously.
No, not anymore.
Maybe we lost a lot of Ilnur Zakarin fans, but by mistake. I don't know. Accidental.
At the Giro, we took these phone messages and we spent the rest days answering some of the questions.
Now, I would just say a lot of people email in questions or send us questions by Twitter or Facebook, which is great, but it's really nice if you can just phone in a message because it gives us... Well, it gives us something to listen to, and rather than
nice
just reading out,
put
a voice to the question. Exactly.
So phone in, or you know, leave a voice memo with a question for us on the rest day, and we'll get through as many of those as we can.
Yeah, phone through by the end of Sunday.
I think Daniel's hoping to maybe join us for that if we can.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Yeah. He was quite keen to join that, and Orla will be around as well. So.
Yeah.
There's a few, you know, if you've got questions for any of us.
Yeah, because we used to just take the day off on the rest days and not do an episode, but now we do the press conference on the rest days. But if you are all up to date with our coverage, or perhaps you've listened to all the stage recaps, don't forget Kilometre Zero, our spin-off show, if you like, looking at a different side of the tour. 5 episodes released this week, another 5 next week, and 5 more in the final week. Well, I mean, what have we... Well, we've got quite a lot of interesting stuff
today
there.
Was the 10-year anniversary Kilometre Zero on the Slipstream team. What was it called? The Argyle?
The 10 Years of Argyle.
10 Years of Argyle. And it was excellent. Mainly an interview with Jonathan Vaughters, but we heard from Will Frischkorn as well, who almost won a stage for them in their first tour in 2008. A forgotten man, really.
Our colleague Ed Pickering, who we were working with in 2012. You mentioned we were here in Chartres in 2012 when we overdid it by having a rash second cognac after dinner. Do you remember? We were here on the Friday night before the time trial. It made that a Saturday. Saturday morning, I was in search of a pharmacy for some Nurofen, I have to say. But what fond memories.
Very fond memories indeed. Anything else before we move on to the last topic of the day? I think we haven't mentioned for a few days our book, and our book, A Journey Through the Cycling Year, is available on Audible now as an audiobook. A lot of you have been asking about that. The book was published in March. It's mainly diaries from a lot of the races we were at last year, including chapters though, also by Ashley Milman Passio, who's currently riding very well at the Giro Rosa in
Italy. But all read by us, so it's a kind of...
Mainly read by us. The chapters are written by Francois, yourself, Lionel, me, Seb Piquet.
Daniel.
Daniel Freeb. And most importantly, Ciro Scognamiglio on People Pozzato. And we're very sorry we haven't had Ciro on the podcast yet. He's we've been telling to escape early, and it's been difficult to get Chiro on, but he's champing at the bit. He's very keen.
Yeah, we're keeping our powder dry for when Nibali moved into contention.
Speaking of which,
yeah, this morning I spoke to Brent Copeland at Bahrain Merida. I will play this at some point, but I talked to him about the signing of the young British rider Stevie Williams, who had a fantastic baby Giro a few weeks ago, and has, well, he'll be riding as a stagiaire, doing some one-day races for Bahrain Merida before the end of the season, and will be turning pro for them next season. And I talked to him. He had some really interesting observations about talent spotting, but also about how to responsibly develop a young rider. He was talking him up as a, you know, future GC type of rider. So we'll find a way to play that somehow.
Daniel actually was telling me that Nibali is absolutely flying, and that their poor performance in team time trial actually owed to Nibali just going too hard on the climb,
right,
and blowing the team to smithereens. Which is, that's a, you know, team time trial, you've got the result, but it doesn't really tell you, especially doesn't tell you how the top guys are going, because it's a team event, and they might have got that one a bit wrong. But Nibali is apparently in great form, so, you know, looking forward to seeing what he does in this race.
Chiro is in great shape as well, because I see him every morning, you know, running after Vincenzo Nibali, and he really, you know, catches him all the time, and
great turn of speed.
And runs after Nibali for, you know, like kilometers with his phone to his mouth.
Mark Cavendish isn't he? Oh dear, where was Mark Cavendish today?
We'll also find a way to play my chat with Cedric Vasseur, the new boss of Cofidis. He was brought in January to kind of turn around the sinking ship, if I can say that. I mean, it's a team.
You don't want to turn around a sinking ship, do you? I mean, you're getting your metaphors mixed up a bit there. You want to get the water
Actually, corrections corner. Yesterday, in my interview with Matt White, I described the bottleneck into the first section of Pave as being like a pint into a quart pot. What I meant, of course, was a quart into a pint pot.
See, Matt White, we saw him wandering along the road quite aimlessly tonight, didn't we?
Talking of the cobbles, I mean, because we're slowly heading there, and they were probably one of the reasons why we had a quiet stage today. There is a question asked, you know, and it's whether Geraint Thomas, who held the yellow jersey last year at the beginning of the tour, and is still very close to Greg Van Avermaet, even though he lost a few seconds today. Because, I mean, there's a small little quarrel there about, taking the jersey out of the first week. Greg Van Avermaet was definitely today in the press conference saying he really meant to keep the yellow jersey until Annecy and the Alps. But we saw Geraint Thomas yesterday attack to grapple a few seconds. So, well, obviously, he would be keen to, take it again, if only for a day. I talked to Nicolas Portal, his, Sky team director, this morning about it. Maybe we can listen to a bit of it.
Nicolas, of course, there's been a lot of talk about Chris at the beginning of the tour, and now the focus is kind of shifting towards Geraint. His performance is promising. He's getting closer to the yellow jersey. Is it an ambition, do you think?
I think he's always been like that, you know. Firstly, you know, you've got someone who's been winning 6 Grand Tours, and most of the Grand Tour he's not winning was on the podium. So clearly he's our leader. There's no any question about this. And secondly, I think it's where maybe some person they are not in our team, or maybe in cycling they maybe understand, but we've got someone else who is growing up. He had a fantastic year this year. He could almost won 3 stage races. And I think he deserves, at least we can support him. And the thing is, we got a strong team, so it's not a big deal for us to support too. And now he's perfect, because he's on he's second on GC. That's good for us. In 1 week, or maybe even less, or even more, if we have 2 guys battling for the GC, at least you got 2 guys. Technically, you know, if Jay follows a move and he's still up on GC, that's good for us. We don't need to react, or at least we don't need to rush ourselves to react. We'll be other teams. This is the kind of strategy, you know. And anyway, we can support, and we forgot it. Like Egan Bernal will be also really good. So I get the point. Like people, they say, "Oh, they shift." Or, no, there is no shifting. We can clearly support 2 bike riders, and clearly Chris he has nothing to prove, you know. He has nothing to prove.
The fact that Geraint held the yellow jersey at the start of the tour last year, do you think he likes it and he would like to do it again?
Yeah, of course, you know. Well, I think that everybody would like to be in yellow, even if it's too early. And I think it's what he's trying to do. And we try to do, we, you know, pick up somebody if it's possible, you know. That's good, you know. We've got the team for that. And he make a positive things, you know, for us. It's quite, so, yeah, all good. I think you will dream to have it, yeah.
Francois, you said we were heading towards the cobbles slowly. Well, today we were heading towards the cobbles very slowly. Let's hope it picks up the pace a bit tomorrow. But just this morning, we were still recapping what had happened yesterday. This is the peculiarity of covering the Tour de France. You're here and you're so close to it, and you're trying to gather together the snippets of information, the stuff you hear on the TV, the immediate reactions sometimes aren't always correct, and it takes a few hours for the story to come out in the wash. And it was only really when we were just recording that we realised or knew that Tom Dumoulin and Romain Bardet had collided, and that was the cause of both of their problems yesterday. What are the odds, really, of two of the potential winners of the Tour, certainly podium potential riders, coming together like that, damaging the bikes and costing themselves so much time. Bit of an inquest this morning with Team Sunweb, because Tom Dumoulin was, his team support was haphazard, if we can say that. The Dutch media here is so febrile, isn't it? There's so many of them, TV, newspapers, internet, of course. And they all want the guts of the story. They want to kind of, it gets a bit finger pointing, and the apportioning of blame comes into it a bit. And poor old Laurence Ten Dam seemed to be the one getting it in the neck a little bit this morning, because he is supposed to be the rider with Dumoulin. So when Dumoulin's bike was not worthy, he is supposed to swap with Ten Dam, but Ten Dam was not with him because they'd all got split up just before that. Simon Geschke was the rider nearest, but Geschke's are probably about 6 inches shorter than Dumoulin, so they couldn't swap bikes. I spoke to Luke Roberts, the Sunweb sports director, about what had happened and kind of how the fallout of that incident had come to pass overnight. It was pretty chaotic there in the last 10K. Have you pieced together exactly what happened?
Our riders had lost each other. It was a very hectic final. Our riders lost each other just a few hundred metres before the incident with Tom. Tom's got a swing through the bunch and hit Bardet's bike, broken the spokes in his front wheel. He couldn't continue riding. He couldn't move across to the right-hand side of the road. He had to stop there on the left. Our guys were not in the position to be able to quickly do a bike change with him. And Simon Geschke was the only one that could stop quickly. Can't offer him a bike anymore with the size he has, so offered him to change the front wheel quickly. The communication over the radio was not clear enough how it came through, what was going on. We were basically on damage control after that.
The Tour de France throws up so many things every day, but what are the odds of two podium possible winners colliding and costing each other some time?
It's racing. I expected that yesterday's final was a really dangerous one for something like that, and unfortunately we were on the receiving end of it. This whole first week there's a lot of hectic stages and a lot of moments where time can be lost. It makes the race interesting. I'm all for it. It would be disappointing to see somebody completely lose their leader out of the classification because of it.
Nearly everyone has had a problem now. It's almost like back to square one, and still with the cobbles to come.
Just thinking yesterday morning whether it's good luck we've had or whether we just haven't had any bad luck until that point. So, you know, we'd had an advantage basically because of others' bad luck, but yesterday we were the ones that were on the receiving end of it. So that's racing, that's the Tour de France, and it's back to a level playing field again.
Lastly, you're a Dutch team. You've got a big Dutch star as your leader. The Dutch media are here in huge numbers, as they always are. There's always an inquest in the Dutch media about these kind of things, and people want to know who should have been with Tom. I mean, how do you obviously have an inquest in within the team about what went wrong, but how do you kind of balance out so it doesn't become a blame game and finger pointing and that kind of thing?
That's the danger. People start to point the finger and look for excuses or look to blame others. Basically, the only thing we can control and the advice I give the guys is to look what they themselves could have done better in the situation. We had a very constructive talk about it. amongst the team, and everybody could find improvement points or seeing the small mistakes that would happen. And it was a big learning experience for us all at the team yesterday. And I think in the future we'll be better for it.
I'm assuming it was Lawrence Tendam who is supposed to stay with Tom's in the event that a bike change is needed, but I guess it's not as easy as just saying, oh guys, stick together, when it's going left and right and the road's narrowing and everyone's trying to move up. I suppose it was unfortunate that when Tom got going again, he blasted past Tendam because Lawrence didn't know where Tom Dumoulin was. I mean, that is racing, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we have more guys here that have the similar bike size to Tom. They would have been an option to do a bike switch with. They'd lost each other a few hundred metres before that and weren't quickly backed enough together. And that was basically the beginning of where a lot of small mistakes started to happen. So
that was Luke Roberts. We're about to wrap things up for tonight. Well, I'm about to publish the poll for Pedlar de Charme on Twitter. Get a lot of suggestions as well for a nickname for Peter Sagan. I think my favourite is possibly the not-so-Slovakian.
The not-so-Slovakian?
Yeah, that's a bit convoluted maybe, but I quite like it. But there's a few. So the
fast vacuum? No.
Yeah, I thought about it this morning, but I didn't dare, you know.
We'll get through them.
Did you nearly say that?
In the morning, I thought, you know, very loudly to myself, even fast vac, because slow vac. But I thought, no, it's not good enough. But who knows?
Probably not. It's flying black pudding, Francois. Let's put it that way.
We'll collate all them. That's all for tonight, though. Thank you very much, Francois.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
You have been listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France. Thanks to our sponsors, Rafa and Science in Sport. The music is by Santoré. This episode was produced by John Mooney.